Good evening, and welcome to Talk Truth Radio with your host, Dr. Rayne Morgan. Dr. Rayne Morgan is Mother Earth, and you can look forward to the next 3 hours of enlightening talk. What are the issues? More importantly, what are the solutions? We hold the torch. Together we stand. Now join Dr. Rayne and this evening's guest. Open your mind and have a good time.
Thank you so much for joining us. This is Ascension Road Talk Radio. I am Dr. Rayne Morgan, and I am your host. And I have, again, with me this evening, Almeen. We are going to continue on with where we left off last week. A little bit about Almeen before we get started. Almeen has written many, many books. We talked about this last week, but just to kind of recap a little bit, Journey to the Heart of God, Mystical Keys to Immortal Mastery, A Life of Miracles, Mystical Keys to Ascension, just to name two, and we could just go on, but let's not do that. Let's bring Almeen on, and we'll talk about ascension and becoming immortal. Good evening, Almeen.
Good evening, Rayne, and thank you again for having me on your show.
This is important stuff we're doing, my sister.
And it's very pleasurable. I like nothing better than to be on your show, Rayne. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. You're very welcome. Just for the folks listening out there, perhaps we've got some people that haven't heard my show before. We have time change, and Arizona does not change times, and the rest of the world does. So we may have a few people that listen to Dr. Brooks Agnew, and if we do, welcome to Ascension Road. Love to have you. Hope that you find something with our show that you very much like. Now, Almeen, just for folks out there that don't know who you are, it's hard for me to imagine that there are very many people that don't know who you are, but just in case there's two or three, you are a three-prong Nagual. I know I've studied for many years with you the Toltec way. Explain to people, and we're going to do this briefly because we've got the next most important part of the show that we want to get to, but explain briefly, what is a three-prong Nagual?
Well, in actual fact, even though I will explain why that is technically an obsolete term for me at this point, the three-pronged Nagual's job is to bring in the unknowable. And what happens is that somebody does not just choose to be a Nagual. They are born one in that they have the double fields around the body, almost the way you would have a double pupil in your eye or a double yolk in your egg. The luminous egg or cocoon around man's body consists of his seven bodies. A Nagual has two of those. And during their lifetime, while in mortality, they actually crack that luminous cocoon, not all the way through, because that could cause death, but they crack it in a way that creates these protrusions or prongs on the edge of it. Somebody whose egg cracks in three prongs, three cracks inside the egg, creating these extensions, are the ones that bring in the unknowable, meaning information that cannot be known by either your left or your right brain because it consists of brand new information coming in, say, for example, from outside the cosmos. If you're a four-pronged Nagual, there are two cracks that crisscross each other, and then your task as a woman, if you're a four-pronged Nagual woman, is to deal with the unknown. And that which can be known, but it's usually done through non-cognitive means. And the man works with the known. He takes the unknowable information that comes through into the unknown and finds an application for it. And so interprets this in terms of laws of living. In this way, Nagwals, who are dedicated to leading others to freedom, have for eons existed in a symbiotic relationship to lead others out of illusion.
Why is the three-prong term obsolete now? What would we
call
it?
Well, this is phenomenal because I never would have suspected it, since, you know, certainly this is not part of the oral traditions that are passed on. But if one goes beyond the initial mastery stages, mastery meaning someone that has conquered the dialogue of the mind with total stillness, so that the mind is no longer in a clamor the way someone on the street's mind would be responding to life. So in the later stages, if you've cracked your egg three times before, you crack it an additional four times. If you've cracked it, a four-pronged Nagwal, you will crack it an additional three times. As you go into the higher stages of ascension and immortality, lo and behold, the egg cracks again. Nobody ever told us that there was something like a seven-pronged Nagwal, because at that state in the past, normally they had vibrated into the ascended mastery realms out of physicality. But that has changed now. There's a lot more masters that have gone even beyond humanness, walking among us because of the requirements of the times. And I can explain that at some point if you wish.
Do it now, please.
Okay. The Earth became a very, very major pivot point for the cosmos in February of 2005. And she started to ascend, leading an ascension of all planetary bodies behind her because of how she ascended. She actually went over the edge of space because the mother opened a gate there for her to ascend through because of the tremendous opposition that lay ahead of her if she was to go up through the different layers of the cosmos. She actually went out of the cosmos. But in a very orderly fashion, the mother had us open large gates within the wall or the membrane that holds the cosmos, and all of life followed behind. I remember the night that happened. I had a spacecraft above my house, and we were able to telepathically communicate with them, and they kept saying, "What are you doing? We don't want to fall over the edge of space." Well, what happened is the Earth became very, very important, and she had to be representative of all kingdoms to be able to lead all kingdoms. Mother wanted the ascended masters to move forward, and Mother is the infinite being's personification, and because there is more feminine components within the infinite than masculine, Mother is in fact feminine, and the Father is her first creation. Feminine that births life.
Yes.
So the point is that Mother wanted those that went into these advanced kingdoms to stay physical, because she said that stagnation had taken place not only in the ascended mastery realms, but also in the God kingdoms, and that they needed to have the positive pole reinstated. The proactiveness of humanity was perfect for that. So her instruction was to the masters as they went into ascended mastery is to stay in physicality.
I find it very interesting when you and I talk about these next stages, and especially when you talk about the clatter and the chatter that goes on in people's heads. I remember it, but I no longer have it. Now, I know I'm not where you are in this ascension process. I'm following along. I'm coming. but I am paying particular notice as of late that there is no real chatter going on in my head anymore. I don't have a concern for the things that other people come to me and talk to me about getting through, sickness in their bodies, financial difficulties, relationship issues. Does he love me? When is he going to come? Am I ever going to find somebody? Why isn't she in my life? That sort of thing, the things that I deal with on a daily basis, almost, I have noticed that are minus now from my life. And most of my time, I'm going to say 95% of the time that I live now is spent in being focused on what I want to create in my life, feeling good in my body. Very seldom do I have anything in my physical body that doesn't feel good. I am doing the Sunrider food, as you and I have talked about before, and I eat very live, so I am going through a raw. Don't want to give anybody the idea that I'm chewing on, you know, a cat's hind leg or something while it's still meowing. When I say live, you know, nuts, berries, grains, that sort of thing. Want to be clear about that. So I do have some downtimes in my physical body, but that's just the transition, moving out the old junky stuff, you know, out of my physical body that doesn't serve anymore. One of the things that I have noticed since I've talked to you is, for those people that listened to our show last week and then, you know, a couple of weeks before that, I said to you, how do you know when you are moving into immortality, when you are ascending? Has anyone mentioned to you that they periodically hear a rushing sound in their ears? Is this one of the symptoms that people are hearing or going through?
I am not entirely sure what you mean by rushing sound, so if you can just hold for a minute, let me just see what you're seeing, just one second.
Okay.
Okay. My sister, what that is, what you're hearing, is that your clairaudience is clicking in and out directly. You know, you do a lot telepathically with beings. You have angels speak to you and you can hear them telepathically. But I'm hearing your physical ears click in and out. And that rushing is actually the multitudes around us speaking.
How can I translate that? Or can I?
Well, I'm not sure you want to. You
okay.
See, because I mean, I've had times like that where my ears click in and I hear everyone speaking.
Okay.
And I do know of some of the masters that are in my classes that have had it full time. And they've said to me that we have never got a silent moment. And these are masters who are in silence of the mind. Mm-hmm. So, you know, personally, I prefer that my silence. And then if someone speaks to me, I actually normally hear it in their languages. I then write the languages down and then I translate it.
Okay.
Sometimes I hear it in English. But an example of the advantage of that, we've been receiving information from this wonderful kingdom that, you know, it was called a forgotten kingdom in that it didn't stay in our fairy tales like the dragons or the fairies or someone. But they're called the Elamakusanek, and they're diminutive little tiny fairy-like beings that live in large numbers at the very deep levels of the ocean. And they've been speaking to us. Well, when you hear it with your ears, it sounds like the squeaking of mice. But if you hear it telepathically, it's just like someone speaking to you in your head.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm not sure you want to be hearing everybody all of the time is what I'm trying to say.
I'm very sure I don't want to be hearing everybody.
Especially now that it's so nice and quiet, you know. And
yeah.
The other thing, oh my goodness, Rain, there's an interesting phenomenon. I have, on rare occasions, had instances where the work I do is so stressful for the body that the heart stops beating. And it has sometimes stayed that way for, I'd say, maybe 12 hours is the maximum that I've had it stay that way. But when the heart stops beating, total silence. Then you become aware that there is, in fact, noise in your head from the blood flowing. And that when that stops, there is such profound silence.
I very much enjoy what is no longer going on in my head. And now in my clientele, when people come to see me, my heart so deeply goes out to them, and I have such understanding now for the grief, I think would be a good word to a good adjective to lay on that, because people are in grief, and it's difficult to talk to them about making all that noise stop. I know that you mainly teach now to large groups. I know that you don't see people privately, but I thought about this the other day. I had a client here, oh, my sister, in such turmoil. Two men and illegitimate children, and I think I'm crazy. What can you do? Please help me. And I sat there as I listened to her, and I thought about you, and I thought, I wonder what Almin would have back in the day said to these people. You know, I help people get through their issues and change their focus. And, of course, I'm talking to them now about coming from that place of love, gratitude, and praise. But, you know, oftentimes people look at me like I'm nuts, you know. Yeah, that's easy for you to say. How do I live my life from, you know, love, praise, and gratitude when I can't think of anything that I have to be grateful for? And I find myself saying to people often, you know, sometimes it's enough in the moment to be grateful that you have eyes to see and ears to hear. But my heart goes out to them.
And it would, because, first of all, you are living in the silence of the mind, and two things become possible then. The total opening of the heart can only be in the absence of that dialogue. And when your heart is that wide open, it's so sensitive. And then the second part of it is, Rain, that it takes the silence of the mind for us to properly listen. For instance, somebody says something, they talk about a rushing in sound that they hear. How can you know what that means unless you can enter in their head and look through their eyes? You can only do that if you have no dialogue. And so true listening in the form of assimilation only takes place when there is no dialogue. The dialogue is the result of resistance to life. And, you know, as for your advice to your client, I have a great master that's in one of my classes from California. And what he has been through in the form of torture in his life, it is horrific. And he has spent days in such acute agony, and he always would not get out of bed until he could find one thing to be grateful for and truly work on it till he felt it from his heart. And he says sometimes the pain that he was put through was so intense that all he could be grateful for was that he was breathing.
Yeah.
But it truly kept him alive.
Yeah. I remember times, you know, and it's been a long time now since it's been that way, but I can remember 15, 18 years ago getting into bed at night and being so grateful that I had a comfortable bed to sleep in. Just that one thing.
Yes.
And that has been my endeavor, to move people into that place of gratitude for something, anything. Because the second that, and I know I'm talking to the choir here, but the second that we move into that place where we feel gratitude for the slightest thing, the least of things, and of course seeing and hearing are certainly more than the least of things, but even sometimes the least of things can change whole mood, your whole attitude, being grateful for something. Last week, when you and I started the show, I said to you that we've, as a world, we're taught that if there's good, there has to be bad. If there's up, there has to be down. And that we are now moving out of those polarities. They no longer exist for us. And this is what you and I have begun in these past couple of weeks talking about. And I want to continue on in that vein. And my sister, I have to tell you, because this is so interesting to me, and I know other people that get into conversations with me want to just tell me to go sit in my room and be quiet because they don't want to hear any more about this. But I almost, excuse me, don't have anything else to talk about. It's a waste of breath and energy and life to have conversation that talks about things that are anything other than where we're going and what we're moving into. I don't care who won the football game. I don't care.
But, you know, part of the problem where there is this more shallow communication, and I don't mean to suggest that the football game is so shallow, but where there is this more shallow communication, Rain, is how little people can truly hear each other.
Yeah.
How can anyone really speak about complexities or abstractions when they cannot truly hear each other? While one person is speaking, the other one is in their head already formulating their next sentence.
Yeah.
How much true listening really goes on?
Right.
No wonder everyone is communicating at such shallow levels.
And for the most part, most of the people that most of us know very seldom have a silent moment. The TV's going. I hear people say, oh, I just have the TV in the background for noise. Why?
And,
why do you need that noise?
Well, here's why they need the noise. It's unprocessed pain. Because, see, what the dialogue does is it suppresses painful, unresolved issues. That is its sole purpose. And so people that live unexamined lives, that don't take the time to see why something hurts, or what is this reaction about, where did this pattern begin around this specific topic, and then gain the insights of it. Unless people live those deep, meaningful lives, they just keep suppressing the pain, and the dialogue gets louder and louder. Well, noise pulls us out of the moment. And so if we have noisy fridges, you know, humming traffic, this or that,
right,
the other, it will pull us out of the moment into the next. or the previous moment for that matter. But it's in the moment where the silence lies, and it's in that silence where all things are possible.
Yeah. You and I began talking last week about the explanations of the new pairs of emotion, and last week we talked about trust and love. We talked about peace and inspiration, and we talked about creativity and pleasure, and the next pair is acknowledgement and empathy. But my sister, if you would take, let's start with trust and love for those that weren't listening to us last week. Now, go online, go to bbsradio.com. Our shows are archived. They are just about finished with all of the updating. Things are going to load almost instantaneously. You can listen to the shows that Almeen and I have done. We will give you Almeen's contact information. We'll go through that again, but I really want to make use of every moment that we have. So, my sister, could we take a minute and a half to talk about trust and love before we, and then we'll do peace and inspiration, and then we'll get into acknowledgement and empathy. Trust and love.
Trust and love is at the core of a massive wheel of 12 interlocking circles, and they're concentric circles that forms the gridwork in the form of vast frequency bands throughout the cosmos. The core of all life is based on love and trust. And we previously had fear as the opposite of love. In August of 2006, it ceased to exist as a reality as the Infinite Mother actually restored the discordant frequencies of the cosmos. And since that time, fear, although some choose to engage in the illusion of it, no longer is a real emotion. Trust has taken its place. And love is the desire to include. Trust is the desire to surrender. And the more we see of life and the perfection underlying the appearances, the more love we feel for it. And the more we are exposed to such perfection, the more trust we have that the infinite being has things well in hand.
Peace and inspiration.
Peace is the desire to be at home. The feeling that you have come to the quiet spot, that core of your being, that is the foundation of holiness. It is the place of the inner sanctum. When you have access to that inner sanctum, you carry your sacred space with you wherever you go. When that occurs, there is no resistance to life. For what is there to resist when you are in the luminosity and the peaceful habitation of your own holy space at all times? This is true authentic living that comes from the core. When you live like that, you see yourself as an effect. Like rain, you plan what you wish to create instead of bemoan yourself as a victim or an effect. When you see yourself as a cause, carrying your place of peace with you, your inspiration also flows from within, and that inspiration is designed to create. There has a new purpose in life. The old purpose of turn the unknown into the known through experience ceased to be when we finally completed that. The new way is to express as creation, as creatively, and creating through the heart that which is. In other words, we take the beautiful eternal principles that is the infinite's being, and we find the most beautiful, inspired, creational ways to bring them into our life.
I love the way you wrote this. It is in the deep peace of our being that the perfection of all life is accessed. It is here that inspiration is born. I like that. That makes me feel good when I listen
you.
To those words.
I write automatically, so it's
all
like hands. I'm hearing it for the first time, and it sounds good to me, too.
I know. Does that sound good? Creativity and pleasure.
Creativity and pleasure. When we feel that we are being co-creators with the infinite, in other words, previously we had a destiny, we had a portion of that part of the unknown illusion that we undertook to solve, often through opposition and pain. That's obsolete. At this point, Mother has given us 50% of our own free volition to do anything with our lives that we wish. And the pleasure that fills our soul as we look at the creations around us and realize that in the same way, such a manifold diversity and exquisite expression of life is ours to bring to the white canvas in front of us. We can co-create our life. We can fill it with beautiful things, with abundance, and with the creativity that is ours to bring to bear on life.
I want to read something that you wrote about this. We have been creating our circumstances, but the reason we have created so much chaos, etc., is that the mind can be fooled. If our thoughts were chaotic or we focused on the negative, then that is what we created. This is ended now because the heart cannot be fooled. And we will not be using thoughts. We will create from the stillness of mind, because it is only in the stillness of mind that the heart will open properly to deeper and deeper levels of love. Through the heart, we will not create distortion. No one can fake love. And when I talk to people about creating from that place that has no thought, it is just pure feeling, a feeling that feels good in the physical body. When I say that to people and they hear it, it kind of, I watch their eyes kind of glaze over for a second, because what most of the people that I have been teaching for all this time, you know, thought and feeling creates the nature of reality. And now we move even beyond thought and just into feeling. And when I say that to them, that we're creating just from that place of feeling, I watch their eyes kind of glaze over for a moment. And as it registers that it isn't even necessary to think about things, that you can just feel them, I watch people take
that. And if you feel really great about something, you have just lived your highest truth. It's our guidance system.
Yeah, it's the guidance system. Well, my sister, the next thing that we move into is acknowledgement and empathy. Now, would you like me to read some of the first here that you wrote, and then you can elaborate on it?
That would be great.
Acknowledgement is the seeing of the ever-unfolding perfection underlying the appearances. It doesn't suffice to acknowledge that the perfection is there and yet feel victimized by someone a little later. Do we truly realize that whatever is in our life has been co-created by us? If we don't like the creation, the new cycle has made it easy for us, since its very purpose is creating through love. If we focus on that which we love, new creation will flow. If we focus on that which we don't like, the change won't come. In this new cycle, we have come into our spiritual maturity. We have become co-creators with the infinite. The perfection is not there just for us to find, but it is there for us to create. How do we do that?
Well, you know, there's a little bit written in The Little Prince, that beautiful little book, that all things that are worth accessing, getting to know, cannot be done through the mind. It has to be done through the heart. And we are back again to the place where it is so imperative that the mind be silenced. And, you know, virtually every book that I write, one way or the other, has that as its end goal. Because while we are in that dialogue, we go around and around and around, and it's very difficult to see beyond the appearances. The mind does not like to stretch beyond what it can control. And so unless it is dethroned to see what lies beyond the appearances, which truly is perfection, the work that I've been given by Mother in the last few years, Rain, it has dealt with the largest possibly, conceivably vast issues that you can imagine. And at times they have looked so chaotic to me. But I know that if I just sit long enough, that which seems chaotic from one vantage point, if I can raise, like climbing a tree to see a little further across the horizon, that's when I see the perfection that really was there all along.
I love the way you said we will create that which we love in another. I think that you and I had talked last week about the kinds of people that we had previously drawn into our lives where we've sat back kind of scratching your head like a monkey saying, you know, or thinking, how did I do that? Where did that person come from? Why did I bring that person into my life? We don't have to do that anymore.
No, we don't. No, we don't. You know, since the poles in the cosmos reversed, which you and I have discussed a lot on these shows, the opposite energies no longer attract. And so we now are faced with a situation where same energies attract. And for once, we don't need to be in the presence of people where there is only a feeling of confusion because they have within them dishonesty and various qualities that we don't have. And one can only recognize that which you are. You know, it brings confusion, and confusion drains energy, and lowered energy lowers consciousness. It's not to our advantage to be around people that have the qualities in us that are not found in the infinite's being. Or not in us, in them.
And you say it is safe for us to empathetically connect with others now. We are no longer the martyrs. We no longer have to be injured that others may learn. Because our hearts are open, we've become cosmic creators. That is a profound statement. We no longer have to be injured that others may learn.
Yes. And, you know, now people ask, well, if we open up empathically to another and they're in a state of confusion or they're in a state of illusion of some sort, surely that's not advantageous. But the interesting thing of it is that if we empathically connect with another, we connect with the perfection of their vastness, not with the small bundle of thoughts and ego and so on that they're identifying with. And it is there where we connect with that perfection for just even a moment that we help to bring it about.
Receptivity and generosity, that is number 5. When a large cycle closes like that which has just occurred, not only do polarities reverse, but as a consequence, flow as well. In the previous cycle, light workers were surrounded by those who wanted their light. The takers weren't consciously aware of what they were seeking, so they took anything they could get. Light workers have therefore, for ages, been giving while others took. Oh, yes. Yes. Let's go into that now.
Well, the problem with that is that when that happens long enough, we get unaccustomed to receiving. And so that's why, you know, the flip side of the coin, not only the generosity, because I don't think that those who are listening to the show have much of a problem with that. I think the problem is more likely to be in the receptivity, because they have been giving for so long, being some of the most major way showers on earth, reindeers, an audience like we have tonight, they're handpicked.
Right.
And when they are listening to these words and these sacred truths, it's because they themselves are major light workers. We've been the givers. But the point is we also now need to learn the charity of receiving.
That's
and that,
an
that is perhaps
way.
The point worth emphasizing.
Yes, that's an interesting way of putting that. The charity of receiving, and I would think that would be charitable to one's own being.
It is, and also it allows the other to bring tremendous blessings for themselves. It also allows a balance to occur in the cosmos, because for eons we have been giving. It creates an imbalance. And for somebody to be able to restore that balance creates a bit better balance even in the cosmos. But the interesting thing is, on this issue of receptivity, I had a fascinating conversation. I was amazed at the viewpoint, actually, with one of the masters in my classes. And they said to me, how is it that you can be grateful for the same thing every day? They said, you know, for instance, a very dear friend of mine had given me a washing machine, seeing that my old one was like on its last legs. She went out and bought me a washing machine. Every day when I put laundry in that washing machine, I am grateful all over again.
Oh, yes.
And they wanted to know why. They said, because by now, you know, it might be older, there might be a better model. Why are you grateful every day? Because it's not the washing machine that stirs me.
Yeah.
It's the thoughtfulness.
Yeah.
The generosity. She didn't go and find the cheapest brand she could. She found the best. She saw the need. This thoughtfulness, it's not the item. I receive the graciousness with which it was given. And because of that, no matter how old the washing machine, that's always there.
Yeah, yeah. You say that for us there has been an agenda associated with giving on many occasions, and this has made us, in some cases, reluctant to receive. Now,
yes.
That's important to understand that.
Yes, it is. Because it's actually a form of codependence. You know, the codependent triangle, which is estimated that most people think that's called relationship, wherein you give and give and give and give so that you can control and control and control, and then when people don't let you, then you're outraged and you can't believe they won't let you love them. You know, this whole old triangle plays over and over until that third leg becomes a very raw spot. But in a way, for us to concern ourselves about the motive with which someone gives is really a form of trying to control them. All we need to know is that up front, everything is stated that there's no strings attached. If they don't mean what they say, or they still hope to buy their way into your heart or whatever the old motives used to be, my sister, it does not belong to us. It just belongs to us to receive with grace, with the express statement that there are no strings attached. It's a gift of generosity. If they are lying to themselves, it's not for us to control their motives. You see what I'm saying? All we can control is our attitude.
Beauty and encouragement is number six. It can be said that beauty is but a glimpse into the perfection of the indwelling life behind form. It sees that which has enduring value, that which is like a doorway into eternity. And every time it does, it encourages the one who sees it. Beauty encourages us to create a living work of art with our life. If we see ourselves surrounded by beauty, we become hallowed by it. Moments become meaningful. A hard journey through life becomes not only tolerable, but we feel encouraged enough to believe that we can flourish rather than survive.
You know, beauty is like a religion to me. And the point is that with beauty, what really boxes us in is when only certain socially learned standards are thought of as beautifully, as beautiful. Example, our mother never wore makeup. She said that beauty was, you know, there with a nicely washed face and you know, healthful skin. That's absolutely correct. But if you think of the geisha, you know, the Japanese culture, it's perhaps the epitome of the made-up woman. Yet her entire life is dedicated to mirroring this one facet of the goddess, which is beauty expressed. And she's also a living work of art. Wholly different standard. There is beauty everywhere we look if we're fluid. And if we are prepared to be amazed, you had mentioned in our last conversation, you know, apparently I had written that in the book, about some of the old Flemish masters, like Frans Hals, Jan Steen, Vermeer. When they painted a still life, it was the spilled wine, the broken glass, the drop that's, a wayward drop that stains the tablecloth or the wood. And they found beauty in that. I think it was the English watercolorist Turner that said at the end of his life that he had never seen anything ugly. And that is truly to live in total acknowledgement of the perfection of everything and to see beauty everywhere.
The seventh is assimilation and communication. Assimilation is the desire to integrate. It is the only way to listen. If I am totally still and I am in the person's head and looking through their eyes as they speak, I can get behind the illusion of words. It is the only way to know what the person is saying. It is true listening. It is assimilation. I am integrating what they are saying. I feel their words.
And you know what we have been speaking about this issue of silence, there is a prerequisite to listen in that fashion. And a skill that business people, mediators, judges, lawyers, people that work with the public really ought to be taught. Our listening skills are at the very best mediocre.
Yes.
This way of listening presupposes that the listener has nothing to prove and everything to learn. The joy, I am asked often to do interviews on radios, and I don't always do them, but with you it is a total joy. Because when one of us is speaking, the other one is in total silence. And, you know, at this point we can hear each other's thoughts. So the clamor of working with somebody that has the internal dialogue, I'm speaking, but they're not even listening. And it is that which you say, what is the point?
Right.
You know, it's almost like this endeavor of futility. It is the greatest gift one can give somebody is to truly hear them for the first time in their life.
I love what you say. Time with nature has frequently become action-oriented, if indeed it is had at all. But all creatures speak to us with the message of their frequency. We can assimilate their life's special song by sitting in silence and feeling it within ourselves. So much action, my sister, so much doing, moving, never taking a moment to just sit and look at the color of a flower or listen to the sound of the sun or the moon shining. I can hear that.
You know, in creation we have been mirroring multiple things that have been occurring in the cosmos. And Rain, there were in fact multiple reasons why doingness became overpolarized. And one of these reasons is, in fact, that if you look at the cosmos, as you know, you would look at your own emotional or mental body around your physical form, there is, in fact, a form that the Infinite Mother has taken. And we have spoken about the fact that out of the multitude of planets, the Earth is the cradle of civilization, and it is here where she has taken this form. You know, and we have spoken about this holy city and the fact that the goal is for light workers everywhere to bridge these realities so we can actually see her face to face. But this holy being that is the source of life, the cosmos is like her body, it's like her luminous egg. Outside the cosmos, at this stage, this has not been the case till some months ago when we finally ascended to levels in which life had not previously individuated. But where we are currently, there are oceans of consciousness separated by membranes, each one in its own frequency. When life was designed within the cosmos, they made a contract to assist with the life because it would create a pulsation. In fact, if you think of us as a television show to them, they became addicted to the show. They forgot that there was audience participation needed. Over the eons, the oceans of consciousness outside of the cosmos overpolarized into inactivity. That caused overactivity inside the cosmos. That was only understood and, shall we say, fixed or upgraded last week. It was a most extraordinary event. So what I'm saying is there was a reason why we in the cosmic life were overpolarizing into activity, but it is no longer necessary. And we absolutely have to insist that we have time for deep, meaningful living.
That's an interesting concept. It is a concept, deep, meaningful living. I make that my priority every day, every moment, to live each moment meaningfully, deeply and meaningfully. Omin, I would like to stop here. We're almost at the end of our hour, and next time we come on, we will be talking about passion and joy. I want to give the folks your information, how to get a hold of you or get a hold of your books, your website, spiritualjourneys.com. I highly encourage everyone out there, go to the website. Look at the books that I always want to call them tapes, but mostly they're CDs now, aren't they?
Yes.
Recordings. Let's call them recordings. Things that you can get so that you can begin studying this work. Now, future shows to come, we are going to be talking about such wonderful subjects, and that's how I see it, as magic, as Aleister Crowley, and as you know, my sister, I'm a long-time student of magic, as Aleister Crowley coined the definition, magic is the art and science of causing change to occur according with the will. Now, just to let folks out there know, there's a second ring of magic. We're not talking about manipulative magic any longer. Spells and things that we have done, incantations, that sort of thing. We're moving beyond that. We're moving beyond the objects and potions and rituals and rites and that sort of thing. We're moving into simply thinking and feeling it and causing it to become. So we will be talking about that. Of course, we're going to go further into the 12 different pairs now of emotions. So stay with us, boys, girls, guys, dolls, because we're just getting a good start. I'm excited, Almeen.
Well, thank you so much, and I know we're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to do our own show together, I believe,
yes.
And it'll be wonderful.
Yes, we are. So I want to encourage all of you, come back next week, and we'll be telling you more about times, and Almeen is part of the BBS network now. She will be coming on some afternoon hours, and I believe we're talking about a Friday evening show from 8 to 9. It is all about helping you ascend, moving out of that place where you are. And I know about that place, that it's a place that contains hurt, pain. We don't have to have that anymore. And I have to tell you folks listening, Almeen is probably one of the most effective, most brilliant teachers that I personally have ever had the pleasure and the gift to study with. And, you know, I have to just for a moment here, 2 seconds, toot my horn a little bit and say, you know, that in doing radio for so many years and in studying for more than 30 years, I mean, I've looked at everybody's stuff. You know, my background is in right use of will, Ramatha, magic, high ceremonial magic. I've studied everybody's stuff, all mean. And you're the best. I like
thank
it.
Thank you. Thank you, my sister.
You're very welcome. Thank you for coming on the show tonight. Spiritual journeys, spiritual journey.
Journeys with an S.
Spiritualjourneys.com. I really, really encourage you all, go visit the website, check my sister out, see what she's about. You will not be disappointed. There is only life to be gained. My sister, I thank you, and I'll be talking to you soon.
We'll talk soon. Good night, Rain.
Bye-bye. And I want to say good night and many blessings to all of you. Thank you so much for being with us. We'll be back next Sunday night at 9:30. Be well.
The talk radio you have just enjoyed is brought to you by Dr. Sandra Rose Michael and Energy Enhancement Systems. Have a very blessed week, and please join us next Friday at 8 p.m. Pacific Time when we return with more exciting talk. To find out more about the host and sponsor, visit drrainmorgan.com and energyenhancementsystems.com.